One in five Americans has learned a new language on their bucket list, or life backlog, if you will. If that's you, make 2024 the year you finally check it off the list with Babbel. Upgrade your personal skill set in 2024 with Babbel, the science-backed language learning app that actually works. Babbel's quick 10-minute lessons are handcrafted by over 200 language experts to help you start speaking a new language in as little as 3 weeks. Its tips and tools are approachable, accessible, rooted in real-life situations, and deliver with conversation-based teaching so you're ready to practice what you've learned in the real world. I have a trip to Mexico coming up, so I've been using Babbel to brush up on my Spanish. The courses are short and sweet, so I can do one whenever I have a few minutes to spare. And the words and phrases it teaches you are designed for practical, real-world use, like ordering at a restaurant or asking for directions. Babbel can even provide you feedback on your pronunciation with its speech recognition tech. And it's not just for Spanish. Babbel includes 14 different language courses, each backed by a 20-day money-back guarantee. Here's a special limited-time deal for Scoop Nation. Right now, get up to 60% off your Babbel subscription, only for our listeners, at babbel.com/gamescoop. Get up to 60% off at babbel.com/gamescoop, spelled BABBEL.com/gamescoop. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Are you thinking about getting into Dungeons & Dragons? Maybe you're looking to expand your horizons as a DM or a player. If that's the case, then it's time for you to check out The Dungeon Cast, the best D&D podcast out there that helps you passively learn all about the game just by listening. Join co-hosts Will and Brian as they break down the lore of a rich multiverse 50 years in the making in a lighthearted and beginner-friendly way. They cover everything from character creation options to tips for dungeon masters. There's something for everyone, no matter how long you've been playing TTRPGs. Find The Dungeon Cast anywhere you get podcasts or on YouTube.
Come get some. Beware,
IGN Gamescoop.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to IGN Gamescoop. I'm your host, Damon Hatfield. Joining me this week, Justin Davis.
Scoop.
Jared Petty.
Scoop.
Sam Claiborne.
What's up, everybody?
We've got a great show for you this week. We're going to talk about possibly selling back our digital games. We've got to talk a little bit more about VR, but first, The Nintendo Wii U.
Yeah.
We're hearing conflicting reports this week about whether or not the console's production will cease this year. Respected Japanese financial publication Nikkei published a report this week saying that Nintendo will stop producing the Wii U this year. And then today, Nintendo has denied that report.
Mm-hmm. So your question is, which version will be the ultimate rare collectible?
Exactly.
Okay.
Yeah.
I think it's going to be that cool Hyrule edition. Remember that one?
Oh, I do remember that.
Wind Waker has a little gold.
It's very sad. I like my Wii U a lot.
Well, I like the Wii U, too.
I don't ever use it, but I like it.
Yeah, actually, my Wii U is currently not even hooked up to my TV.
I bought my Wii U refurbished.
Me too.
Because you can buy them real cheap from Nintendo directly.
I've had a conspiracy theory about that for a long time.
Those are just new ones?
Yeah. That's my conspiracy theory, because when I bought my refurbished Wii U, either they're the best refurbishers on the planet because it was all in like new plastic and new wrap.
They at least replaced
like
the casing.
Nestled in the cardboard in a new box. Yeah. And I'm like, what I think they're doing is that, because I bought mine over a year ago, and they didn't want to deeply discount the price of the Wii U.
Yeah, it's fake price cut.
And so, but then they just sold them for a $50 or $100 discount on their own online store.
It's pretty cool when you buy those, because the box, it's not just like a sticker slapped on it. They have a unique box for refurbished Wii U's with like unique print on it. It's a really cool thing.
We got one of those at IGN.
Here? Yeah?
Yeah, it came in a giant refrigerator size box because it was a refurbished store demo unit.
Yeah.
No
kidding. It's up in our cafeteria.
I could tell that was refurbished because there's scratches and stuff on it. Yeah. But it does have like a, well, it didn't come with a Wii U, so I don't know if that was refurbished part or not.
I've like never seen.
But it's a really cool demo unit. I don't want to slam that demo unit. It's awesome. And if you come by the IGN offices for First Friday, you can play it.
Well, I pulled some numbers on Nintendo's consoles and their production runs. And if you listen them all up, it kind of goes like, this. The NES was in production for 10 years, from 85 to 95.
Wait, are you including Game Boy stuff in here?
No, this is their home console.
Oh, okay. Yeah, because I was going to say, it actually spiked way back up with GBA.
Sure.
Yeah.
And NES.
SNES was in production for 8 years.
And we?
N64 for 7, GameCube for 6. Now, the Wii might still be in production today. Mm-hmm. It is a little unclear. They did announce they ceased production in Japan and Europe. They never announced that they ceased production in North America.
So it's possible there's still Wii Mini.
You can still buy a new Wii on Amazon today.
Do you guys remember the Mini one?
Yeah,
it's a Wii Mini unit as well.
I thought they ceased production. Maybe I was just reading the Japan news, but I thought it was like 2013 they ceased production.
That was in Japan and Europe.
Yeah,
they did not. They may have stopped in North America, but they never announced that they did. So,
what's going to be the rare version of that? I think it's going to be the red version.
I don't
came with the modified version of Super Mario Brothers.
I don't think anyone
that red one, that red one could be real. Also, the blue Black Friday version, do you remember that? There was a blue non-mini. It was a standard blue Wii they did for all. I bought one for my parents. That one's going to be rare.
We shouldn't be talking about this. We got to start collecting.
Yeah.
We got to get the stuff up before everybody else does.
I guess I don't really know that much about the production process of the Wii specifically, but they might not have announced they ceased production in North America because there was no production in North America.
They're saying producing it for North America.
Producing it for North America.
Yeah.
Because they're all manufactured in, you know, their factories.
Yeah.
You're talking about Wii U, not Wii?
Yes.
Okay. That's hard to believe.
I'm talking about Wii.
Wii. Oh, okay.
The Wii U. Has only been in production for, 2012, 13, 14, 15, 16 would make it 5 years.
Yeah.
Sad.
Yeah.
Well, there's five games.
Well, Nintendo's very good at dropping bad ideas like a bad habit. I mean, historically, you think about the Virtua Boy, they killed that in like 6 months. When they realized that wasn't going to fly, they're just dead, done with that.
Was a huge mistake.
Yeah, and they do not stick with things that don't take off most of the time. I think that it would not be at all unbelievable for them to say, well, these things are expensive to make, and nobody's going to buy any more of them than we already have, so
that
why should we make
it?
That's
my thing. It actually makes sense, I think. They have their new console that's either coming late this year or early next year.
And production on that is actually already beginning very
soon. They would have
soon.
To if it's coming out this year. That would have to be ramping up production. Yeah. So why would they have two consoles in production at the same time? One of them isn't really taking off.
They're probably switching over. They probably are almost certainly. What a funny string of words. We talked about this on GameScoop previously, where NX production was actually rumored to be starting sort of suspiciously early. Like relatively early this year. And then that seemed to indicate that was when we were talking about release date. Like, when is the NX going to come out? And you need to start production early enough that you can get them all shipped all around the world and all that. But it was like kind of even early for that.
Yeah.
So it's like they have this factory time anyway. Why spend it making a console that no one's going to buy?
Yeah. You don't want to end up in a situation like Sega did when they moved from the Saturn to the Dreamcast, where you've got this long period where just no games and nothing being made for the thing at all. I think it was over a year where there was just nothing new
that
coming
might be
out.
What we're looking forward to.
Yeah, I think that's what they're worried about is that kind
but
of situation.
That's almost every console launch.
It is, but it gets worse. I think
PS2 to PS3 was really smooth.
And you usually have third parties to fill in the gap.
Yeah,
Nintendo has that problem
games.
With the Wii U. There aren't a lot of third parties. You know, Nintendo typically stops making a lot of games for their own hardware late in the console cycle. You look at the Wii, you look at the GameCube, you look at the N64. There are not that many first-party games that come out at the end. Yeah, they sort of let third parties
pick up
that. Except
there are really only first-party games coming out for the Wii U.
Exactly, and that's the problem. I think that's why we're noticing it more.
And Nintendo has a lot of internal teams, and I'd kind of want to, maybe this would be a good feature, would be to sit down and track what they're all working on or what they're rumored to be working on. Like, I don't know. Like, I have, you know, well over a dozen teams, and I don't think we know it. More than half of them, they haven't publicly stated what they're even working on at all.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Well, so when you look at Nintendo's home consoles, each new console is in production for less time than the previous one. Mm-hmm. But do you think that's just because technology ramps up and it becomes faster to develop new platforms?
If the Wii was in production from 2006 to 2013, that's what, 7 years? That's a pretty
right,
long
time. Right, but that's like an anomaly.
Yeah, it's an anomaly. But I mean, some of that's that the market got more competitive. They were the only game in town here in North
that's
America
true.
For the NES. And for
that's
the SNES,
true.
They were extremely competitive and ultimately probably won the console war in terms of sales and profit. And then
shots fired.
It just got harder and harder and harder and harder because that marketplace got more crowded. I mean, during some of that period, there were four different groups producing major consoles. During around the time of the N64 to GameCube transition, you actually had, you know, four players in the market with Sega moving out, Nintendo moving in, and Sony to deal with. So it was a really crowded place to try to sell a console.
Everything gets faster as time moves on, especially in the entertainment realm. Like, The Force Awakens is hitting Blu-ray 4 months after it hit theaters.
Mm-hmm.
One of the biggest movies to ever be released, made $1 billion, massive blockbuster success, but still hits Blu-ray immediately after, you know, its theater run ends.
I just pre-ordered my copy today.
Oh, excited.
So I sort of see this in a similar light. Like, the cycle for things, you know, movies hit theaters, hit Blu-ray, or on HBO, or on streaming faster and faster and faster.
Yeah.
Games go through a similar transition.
Do you remember, like, when we were kids, maybe even before Justin's time, but, like, it took movies, well, I'm saying, like,
it
took movies
year,
forever to come to video, and they were really expensive.
Yeah.
Like, it was, like, a new movie on VHS was, like, $80.
Yep. If you wanted to buy it brand new, when it was only available for rental, you had to pay that rental store price.
It's insane.
Crazy. And then later on, you waited another 6 months, and you could finally buy it for an ordinary price.
We can't leave this discussion without a nod to the three pillars promotional strategy when DS came out, and Nintendo was very worried that it probably wouldn't work out. It seemed like they were going to ditch the DS. Mm-hmm. And they said, we're going to keep the Game Boy in production and the GameCube, and this is just a third option for everybody. And of course, the DS replaced the GBA.
I remember that E3. That was weird. They hedged so, so hard with the DS. It's not the new GBA. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's a new third pillar, guys. It's not the GBA. It's still here. And like then the DS ended up becoming, you know, Nintendo's, at that time, biggest hit today.
So they'll either have to do that again or just completely abandon the Wii U, which they did for the Virtual Boy, as you said. So there's precedence for both.
And it'll be easier to abandon the Wii U than it'll be for them to abandon, say, the Game Boy, which had been, you know, a bedrock of their business at that point for more than a decade. The Wii U is kind of one of those things that...
I don't think abandoning the Wii U necessarily is related to NX. The Xbox 360 was continued to be produced for a long time after the Xbox One came out.
Yeah, the rumors are so interesting. It's just like, okay, we released the console with a screen in it, massive flop, nobody liked it. Guys, you know what we should do? Let's make a console with a screen in it.
Yeah.
With a screen in the controller.
Yeah, you're talking about the images that are, the supposed images that are leaked this week.
Well, and the patents we saw.
Yeah, there are patents that those images are based on. Mm-hmm. But I don't think the images are real. I just think that they're all from the patent.
The patent's real, but I don't think the images are fake, probably.
Yep. Yeah.
We'll see.
Always in motion, the future is. as we look at, you know...
Always.
Always in motion. The upcoming release slate for the Wii U is very, 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 very slim.
Yep.
There is Star Fox.
Which does look better.
The Legend of Zelda.
So that's, supposedly, but
the
also...
The titleless Legend of Zelda Wii U?
Yeah, which is, it almost, is almost assuredly at least also an NX game, if not totally.
Be a great launch game.
Doing that
Twilight
be
a real mean launch
thing.
Game.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't want to have to buy a new system
Then there's Paper Mario Color Splash, and then there is Mario and Sonic at the Rio Olympic Games. And
you don't need to mention that one.
I'm just saying, come on. You realize that's it. That's pretty much it for the Wii U.
Yes.
So, like, why?
I get a deep, profound sadness when I think about this too much.
Mother 3 can come out for it.
The Wii U had a lot of potential. There were cool things they could have done with it.
I agree.
In the end, they did. Mario Maker's still one of my favorite games of the generation. But
it'll be sad to think of the Mario Maker servers being shut down and that game being a lot less interesting.
Yeah.
Mario Maker, Mario Kart 8 is fantastic.
That's a good point. What happens to that game when the servers are off?
I don't know, man.
Which one are you talking about?
Mario Maker.
I think we'll have to.
Surely they can move that over to NX.
Or 3DS,
you think that'd be a platform they want to keep
Well, sure, but I mean, even someday, you know, let's just like multiplayer servers get shut off on every game.
Wouldn't it be
like,
great if they issued a hard disk with a bunch of people's games
like greatest
code
hits.
On them?
Yeah.
Then they should
Greatest hits,
they should give them all like 10 cents for each copy that's sold. Like, put a 1,000 levels on it, and everybody gets a little cut.
That's a really cool idea. I mean, that's game preservation for you, though, right? We lost all the Zelda Satellaview stuff.
Yep.
Zelda BS, tons of daily quests in Zelda hosted by a person's voice where people would play along to a Super Nintendo Zelda. Those are all gone.
No, we're never going to be able to do that. Archive.org, save us.
Some are gone.
That's a call out to them.
And you can play some of that stuff. I don't want people writing it.
Good luck.
Our first email this week comes from Big Tony Style.
Big Tony Style.
All right.
He says, there was a recent Xbox survey that asked if gamers would like to sell back their digital titles for 10% of the purchase price. What does the Scoop Crew think about this idea? Would you guys sell back any of your digital games?
I have this mental image of, like, Oliver Twist just being like, please, sir, may I have some more? Mm-hmm. I mean, if I bought Hot Trash, sure, I'll take my dime on the dollar, but otherwise, at that point, I just want to have my game.
I don't get it. It's a couponing system, basically, because...
Yeah, well, so, like, one of the most common complaints about digital games is that they can't sell them back when they're done with them, right?
Yeah.
So this would at least provide some small incentive to buy a digital game.
I totally think it's a great idea. I'm up to 966 games.
I wanted to bring up your Steam collection.
966 games in my Steam collection, and in my personal case, no, I'm not interested in selling any of them back, but it makes me very uncomfortable. Like, I increasingly am shifting to buying things digitally. Mm-hmm. Don't like clutter in my house, I just don't like that. But I also have real, real problems with the way that you only lease digital games. You don't actually own that property.
You're not buying the game.
I can't loan the game to somebody in most cases. I can't sell the game if I ever, God forbid, did hit, terrible financial times. Like, I can turn my stack of Xbox One games into cash can't do that with the digital games. Mm. Like, that's a problem. That's a real problem. It's a problem today in 2016, but in 2026, when everything's digital, then we've really created a problem for ourselves in how do you swap things with people? How do you share things? How do you sell things? You know, Sam, you were just saying you went to an estate sale and bought some cool stuff. Like, how do you, there's no sort of sifting through anyone's collection of media. That deeply, deeply disturbs me and bothers me about the future of sort of media and entertainment. And I absolutely think people should be allowed to turn their digital goods back into cash.
I think that's a really great point. I love that you brought up the fact that sharing games is something that could be completely lost in particular. I care less about selling back.
They didn't announce anything about sharing.
Yeah, I don't want to lose this, right?
But I do think that
it opens the door to start that conversation.
What I'm saying is selling back, I don't really care. Sharing, now I'm interested.
But I do think that, you know, 10%, and the 10% is, people are getting really hung up on that because that's such a low number. And I'm like, but the hypothetical is, like, now you have a system in place where you can take, you know, remove this game from your library and receive some Xbox Store credit. Like, the amount is unimportant. Like, if it's too low an amount, don't do it, you know? Right. Like, the market will speak for itself, you know, whether people take advantage of this or not.
Plus, I think, I mean, 10% is low, but it kind of makes sense. There's no real inventory being moved around here, right? It's just a bunch of ones and zeros coming
in and out. It's just mean that they take back your game. Just give somebody the 10% back if they want it. Why are they taking your game back? Well, they have no use for that.
Well,
they'll resell it. They'll resell the game key to somebody.
But it's like I was just saying, there's no inventory being moved. It's like,
yeah, but you do have a finite
number. There's not like a finite amount of game keys.
No, but like there's not a finite number.
They're not going to take the game key back.
But there is a finite.
They're just going to erase it from your system.
No, that's not true.
And give you $10.
You're not understanding the nuance of, like, Steam doesn't own the games that they sell to people. They have to pay. Like, if they sell 100,000 copies of The Division on Steam, they have to give Ubisoft the cash for that 100,000 copies. But if they can keep the keys in their system, they can continue reselling them without giving Ubisoft that money. It's like used games. It's like buying and selling used games. Although there will probably have to be an agreement in place where they do cut in the publisher to some degree.
You would think so.
But they might not get
that
the same
amount.
Like, if they have to pay Ubisoft $40 for each copy of The Division that they sell right now, would they have to give them $40 if they took the key back from somebody and resold it? Probably not.
It's a better deal for Microsoft or Steam because they can resell the game for full price.
Yes.
Whereas GameStop has to sell it for a discounted price.
Right.
Slightly discounted.
Get a used game, used digital game.
It's a used digital game. They get double the sales, triple the sales, however many.
One time I took a Nintendo 64 copy of Turok into GameStop and they offered me 70 cents for it.
Wow.
No, I have all kinds of games. That's why I have crates and crates of old games where I'm like, I don't want any of these, but they're only worth 70 cents. And I'm like, I don't want it, but I want it more than I want 75 cents in my pocket. So I end up with, like, I have like a whole closet full of games, like old weird PS2 and PSP games that I just don't care about.
You should just give them away on GameScoop like Damon did.
Yeah, that's actually not a bad idea, except it's not a tiny box.
Do we have any essays that have been turned in about this?
Yeah, what the hell? Who was that guy?
Oh, yeah. That guy who won all my games. Never. He was supposed to write many reviews for all of them.
Did you send them out?
Yeah.
All right.
He has my games.
The
now.
Burden is
but
on.
But what does he think about Onimusha 2?
Yeah.
I like how you.
I'm gonna look up. Guy's email. I don't remember his name at the moment, but I'm gonna look him up in a.
Well, we know it wasn't Big Tony style.
No, it's not Big Tony style.
I'm very much in favor of this. Hope it to happen.
Microsoft is circulating a survey asking, you know, gauging interest in this. So maybe that would be an announcement. If they chose to do that, maybe that would be an announcement they would want to make at E3.
So yeah, that'd be great. I mean, there's a million and one concerns. Just like we talked about cross-platform multiplayer yesterday, it's one of those things that's it's easy on the surface and deeply complex and complicated underneath. Games get discounted steeply all the time. Mm. So it's like you could only get a percentage back of the cheapest the game's ever been sold, or Microsoft could lose money. Like, I've bought games for 75 cents on Steam before, even though full price, you know, it's $5 or $10.
Yeah.
So it's like, how do you get anything back then? Like, it's complicated.
Yeah.
But
you gotta get my $6 back.
Right.
I think like 40 is better than 6. You know, like that's a thing.
40 right? better than six.
Like, you can go to GameStop and get $40 back. Ah, okay. So I mean, it's a pretty big disparity.
Sure,
but they're talking about digital games,
which are still $60.
Yeah. So maybe like you're like, what if a game that's only available digitally?
Yeah.
I mean, I guess
you get 60 cents back.
$6. That sounds like a bad deal to me, but that's not my judgment check. If someone else thinks that that's a good deal to them, then I think they should have the option to do that.
Moving on, our next email comes from Justin in Lawrence, Kansas.
Nice.
Is that me?
Big fan.
No. Are you in Lawrence, Kansas?
No.
No, they're not you.
Oh.
Another one.
You should go to Game Nut in Lawrence. It's a really good used game store. I like it a lot.
Replay Lounge.
Yeah, and Replay has good pinball.
Yeah. And Free State has great beer.
You guys know a lot about Lawrence.
Well, we go there all the time.
Well, I lived there for 5 years, so. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Justin says, with PlayStation VR's recent big day at GDC, Game Developers Conference, my interest in virtual reality has gone from curiosity to foregone conclusion.
Whoa!
My mind especially races with the possible IPs, intellectual properties, that PlayStation VR could revive. You guys clowned on Jumping Flash a few weeks back.
I like Jumpin' Flash.
But it exemplifies.
I was not here to clown on Jumpin' Flash. I don't want to be accused of
that. I also feel like that was like a year ago.
It exemplifies the kind of PlayStation property that could shine in VR. A colorful, cartoony world with multi-story jumping mechanics. I also think Intelligent Cube would be an incredible, stressful, strange experience in virtual reality.
What a deep cut.
Yeah.
It's fun.
Other obvious possibilities include Shadow of the Colossus.
Yes.
Armored Core and Ace Combat. Any additions to the list? So PlayStation properties we would like to see in VR.
Ooh.
Does it have to be PlayStation?
Well, we're talking about PSVR.
Oh,
so.
Well, because I want Punch-Out.
Oh, that'd be fun.
Yeah, that's not going to happen, probably.
Big cartoon man.
SCNX is a big flop.
It's going back to that commercial with the power glove. You're just like, I want this to happen, finally. Yeah, that sounds
fun.
Or
the beginning of Captain N.
Ooh, yeah, that's true too.
Punch-Out would be good in VR, but let's put on our PlayStation hats.
Maybe does it have to be a Sony? Well, no.
Yes, he keeps saying.
Well, no, it could be a PSVR, so it can be third party, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Star Wars.
Some kind of weird take on Tetrisphere.
That exists in VR. That's Super Hypercube? Is that what it's called?
I don't know. I haven't played this game.
There's a game, to me, it sounds so simple, and it's not flashy, it's not some crazy shooting game, but the best case where I'm like, oh, VR, I get it, is this game called, I think it's Super Hypercube, I hope I'm not, you know, naming a different game, but it's, you're manipulating sort of vaguely Tetris-esque blocks in 3D,
okay.
And then a wall's coming at you, and you have to flip them and sort them so that the shape fits through a gap that's in the middle of the wall.
Oh, like Horth. That sounds amazing.
And so it starts out, it's just sort of a puzzle game of you manipulating the shape in 3D, but the shapes get so big and ungainly that you have to start peeking around them to see the hole in the wall. Oh. And that's the first time that, like, the perspective of, like, you wearing goggles, like, you couldn't play that game in 2D. I mean, mm-hmm. I guess maybe you could use the triggers to, like, lean, mm-hmm. but, like, that was the light bulb moment for me where I'm like, it's this simple, natural, like this thing's blocking my view. Of course, I'm going to peek around it to see the wall and keep spinning and flipping this block and figuring out how to get it to fit.
I'm so glad this game exists. Okay, so there's one. Another one would be a return of Bushido Blade's first-person combat mode.
That'd be great.
Wow, okay.
Yeah, I want Bushido Blade's first-person PlayStation mode, but done right.
Yeah, that's a really good one.
Yeah.
Ape Escape. I don't care about it being in VR. I just want more Ape Escape.
That's a good point.
What was the PlayStation Network game that you were?
So this is actually what I. This is okay. why I was bringing
Pain?
This up. Yeah. Anyone remember the game Pain?
Yeah.
We talked about it yesterday.
Pain was great.
I never played this.
An early PlayStation 3 downloadable game where it's like Angry Birds. You launch a guy from a slingshot at buildings and try to like cause as much damage as you can. Oh. But what if you could do? You could be the guy first person.
Ooh.
Launching yourself.
That's a good idea.
Out of the building.
Like the human bullet on the Tick.
Yeah.
Yes.
That'd be amazing.
I think that could be fun to play in VR. Big PlayStation property, Pain.
Yeah.
Ooh, yeah. Well, I mean, PlayStation has their Warhawk series, right? So
yeah, and
that
also,
would be their. I think Flight Combat is my favorite.
Well, that's why I was right going to say Colony Wars.
Colony Wars. That would be a great
series.
So good.
That's a first-person space combat game on PlayStation.
But as we were talking about, I mean, Battlestar and Star Wars. Like, let's get those done first.
Well, yeah.
Little Big Planet would be cool in VR. The ability to build the worlds in VR.
Oh yeah, that
could be fun.
Yeah.
Like building worlds in VR. That could
building
be a lot of fun.
As a 3D platformer, like you'd build like a Banjo-Kazooie like space too, and you wouldn't have to.
And wander around. Exactly. Yeah, that would be it. It'd be a 3D, I think, definitely, and you'd be wandering through it.
Yeah,
interesting.
I'd like to see Gran Turismo.
Oh, yeah, I mean, that's also a no-brainer. Right?
Or what about the Burnout games that actually were about crashes?
Yeah.
That'd be neat.
Sure. Yeah, I love Burnout. It's been way too long since we got a proper Burnout game. I love turn-based strategy games. I think maybe my beloved Disgaea series would be a good candidate, especially if you could just be like, overlooking the battlefield, being
the lord of this battlefield. I'm going to pick you up and move you.
I think that'd be interesting for real time, like Pikmin style.
Yeah.
Because then you could just sweep around the stuff and just like put people where you need to.
Yeah.
That could be.
Now, we're all saying this a lot because we've been playing Vive, which has like pretty detailed, in depth motion control stuff. that's associated with it. And the other systems don't necessarily have that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So we keep on making gestures and stuff, but a lot of other games are just going to be controller-based.
Well, the Move controller would allow probably
There's Move controller, and then, of course, Oculus has controllers, too. But for now, I've only played the Vive version of that stuff. Hmm. It works really well.
Finally, last year's PlayStation-exclusive Godzilla game was not good. However, what if you could be Godzilla in a VR game? Oh. First-person Godzilla.
There's a game called Giant Cop, which I think we have a demo of, which is similar to that. We're a giant
knocking
giant
over
cop.
Buildings.
And now I just want Lair
breathing
back.
Fire.
Good.
Oh, well, yeah.
Wow.
Lair would be good.
Yeah.
Well, if Lair were good.
Rather have Rogue Squadron. Yeah.
Rogue Squadron.
But yeah, I love the Godzilla idea. Like Kaiju.
First-person Godzilla, I like that.
I like that too, especially with two players. Or four players, like destroy all monsters.
Because he moves kind of slow, you know.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Good for VR. It's not
Yeah, you should
fast.
Check out Giant Cop. That's cool.
Giant Cop.
I think that, that's not on PSVR right now. It's on, is it only on Oculus right now?
It's on Vive.
I don't know, it's confusing. You have a chart of like which games are on which platforms.
You know, you can go to IGN.com and look at complete lists of all the games coming to all the platforms.
Yeah. But do they put them side by side?
No, we only put the hardware side by side. Perhaps you should
Let's
put the side
Let's
by
get
side.
To work on that after.
We do interlink.
No, we have individual games lists.
Yeah, we have individual games lists that link to each other. But we could do a thing where it puts them all side by side.
Yeah.
Giant Cop is easily misheard as something else. Now for another perspective on VR. Joel Green from Horseheads, New York.
That's not
plural Horseheads.
That's not a real place.
What's your favorite game store there?
This is a message from Don Corleone.
Joel says, I have a huge concern about VR and me. I want to make video games for my career. I'm a senior in high school. I make games whenever I can. I'm also planning on going to college for games.
Awesome.
My concern is that by the time I'm old enough to enter the games industry, VR will have taken over, and that will be the new standard for gaming. And because it's so new now, I probably won't be educated in VR development by the end of college. Whenever I hear about VR, I get concerned for myself, but I'm excited for the industry. What do you think about this scenario, as I can't get it off my mind? I know VR probably won't take off super fast, but it will always be a concern in the back of my head. How fast will VR catch on is what he's wondering.
Great question.
He doesn't need to be concerned. I mean, he's...
Like you were saying last week, traditional game development is not going to cease.
No. There's two points. First of all, whatever kind of game you want to make, you can make that kind of game now. Mm-hmm. Small indie tower defense game, huge AAA VR game, like you know that you can run the gamut. But the point I was really going to make is that he's one of the youngs. I'm one of the olds. I'm the one that has a hard time keeping up. Like, what 18-year-old is worried about things
moving too? If you're an old, I'm an older.
I mean, we're all the olds, like, sort of, the more time that passes. But, I mean, I say that half-jokingly, but it's super true. Like, the younger you are, you know, you're up on the apps and the social medias and the games and all the new technologies.
Big pants, pagers.
Snapchat,
Minecraft. Are the kids wearing big pants or small pants now? I don't know. I can't keep up what pants kids are wearing. And that's kind of how I feel about VR. Like, if you truly want to go to school for game design or computer science or, you know, whatever you want to get your degree in, like, you're going to be educated on what you need to be educated on. Yeah. Like, you're going to be able to move fast and keep up to a degree that the people that need to be worried are the people that have been making games a certain way for 20 years. Mm-hmm. If the market truly does move to VR rapidly, those are the people that are going to be in trouble because they're going to have a set of skills that are either going to be impossible or challenging to sort of transition to this new reality. You don't have like an incorrect set of skills yet.
Yeah, a lot of software engineers through their careers find ways to continue to innovate. It is hard to find time. When you're in a crunch and you're just trying to do one thing, it is hard to study something else. I definitely understand the legitimacy of that concern. And I do think that you're just going to have to keep proactively studying. Some of the best engineers I know keep learning new languages so they can stay relevant. Now we're talking about new platforms. When gaming went from 2D to 3D, a lot of developers, particularly in Japan, but also here in the US, were shaken out. Frankly, a lot of them folded because their engineers couldn't make the transition fast enough. So there is some legitimacy to that concern. But the fact that you're already thinking that way, I think, puts you ahead of the curve. And also, as Justin pointed out, these games tend to come back. Yes, VR is going to be a huge thing, but it's not going to wipe out types of gaming. There was a period of time for a while where you could barely find a 2D platformer, and then everybody's like, oh yeah, those are still fun. Mm-hmm. Right now, it's hard to find, you know, a flight combat space sim, but Star Citizen is coming. And they're like, oh yeah, those are fun. And that's going to happen again too. But yeah, just stay up on it. That's going to be, the burden's going to be on you for that. It's hard, I realize, but keep doing it. Don't fall behind. Don't let yourself become irrelevant. If you walk into it with that attitude, I think you're going to be okay.
Yeah, so we can play your games.
You haven't learned anything yet that needs to be tossed out. Like someone in the 90s that spent a decade learning how to animate 2D sprites either had to learn to animate 3D models or, you know, was probably out of a job, like, because 2D games are big, but they aren't everything like they used to be, you know. So I think you'll be fine.
I want to talk about this for a long time because we talked about it before in GameScoop, but this is part of a larger problem in gaming where it's really hard to make a video game. Mm-hmm. And it's too hard to make a video game, and it still is. And I can make a record, and I can write a book, and I can make a movie very easily by myself or with a small group of people.
Sure.
And the small group of people thing is becoming more possible with games, but generally, the scale of games is so hard to attain by yourself right now. Mm-hmm. If you're an amateur, and I'm not saying like you can go to school or be a great coder and not make a, you can make a game that way. But if you just want to one day do those other things I mentioned, you absolutely can do that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a very good point. I mean, I think we're seeing tools like Unity. You know, it was several years ago. I don't know if it still is, but it was free. Like you could just download Unity, which is, you know, the game platform that huge AAA games are made on in many cases, and you could download it and tinker around with it, and there's tutorials and stuff, but it's hugely complex and complicated. Like, anyone can make a shitty album. Like, you don't need it. You don't need any skill or talent at all. Mm-hmm. But not anyone can even make the skill. The tools are still too dense and complicated and
To even make a crappy video game.
Yeah, you've got Unity. Well, you do have things. You have Game Maker. You have Inform. You have Twine. You've got systems like that to create certain kinds of games.
Yeah.
Game Maker is the only one that I've seen used. Like Undertale was making Game Maker.
Yeah, but
even
Game Maker is still like I've tinkered around in that a little bit too. You know, some of that is unfortunately. I don't want to be too much of a pessimist, but it's an unsolvable problem because games are a multidisciplinary media.
I think what will solve it will be AI. And if I can ask, if I can explain to a computer what I want to get.
Just make level 2 better.
Well, if I can explain the activities of AI, will solve this problem.
I agree. That's absolutely the answer.
Yeah.
Speaking of VR development, last week I hosted a few VR developers here in the studio for a little roundtable about VR gaming and where it's going. And one of the questions I asked them is how they had to approach developing a VR game differently than a traditional game. And I thought one thing, Ted Price from Insomniac had to say that they learned, developing a first-person VR game is that they have to be mindful that the player, since you can look around in 360 degrees, if you allow the player to sort of actually spin around, they're just gonna get like caught up. Like, first of all, if you're sitting in a chair, it's hard to like turn around and look behind you. So they try to like funnel the player in one direction with like a wide berth, but sort of prevent them from actually spinning around because it's just too difficult to actually spin around your chair. You're getting like twisted up in wires and stuff. And that's why I think it's so interesting. One of the Oculus Rift launch games, Eve Valkyrie, solves it for this because they just put you in a chair and you can't spin around, right? You're just seated in the chair the whole time.
Yeah.
I thought that was interesting.
I think that's interesting too. Also what solves that is in the Vive Portal demo and the Vive, budget cuts, you have that thing that you basically zap around using portals, and so you're always resetting your need to spin around.
Yeah, did we talk about how clever budget cuts is on Scoop?
Not yet.
Because I don't think that game's getting enough credit for it. If you haven't watched the demo, IGN has a really good demo of it up, or you can, you know, watch the other outlets have done it as well. That game has sort of a portal-esque system for movement where you sort of shoot a portal on a wall or floor, and then your character moves there. They zap there. You know, you can zap yourself around. And I thought it was like me. I'm like, oh, that's kind of neat. But I didn't even realize until I thought about it more deeply that that's solving the big problem of VR, which is how do you stop from people running into walls? And like, because you can't just let people move around. You have to solve the movement problem.
Yeah.
And that solves the movement problem in such a clever way.
That's
like,
great.
You can move around a whole office while sitting in a chair, you know, and still, but it doesn't break the immersion of the VR experience.
It's really natural. The flow is great.
Right. So I don't know if that'll become the standard in a way that like a left analog stick is.
It's funny
standard,
how it was in the Portal game. Like I didn't notice it until I played Budget Cuts that it was in other games. And there's so many experiments right now with mobility in those worlds. But like maybe this will be a standard and maybe it'll be improved upon. Yeah. It's really funny to think of we're seeing standards being made right now for early VR.
It's a very super cool, clever game on its own. But that particular problem that it solves is pretty genius.
Real quick, before we get into video game 20 questions, what are we playing these days?
Ooh.
Last night I started playing Day of the Tentacle Remastered, which is super great.
Jared reviewed that?
Yeah, Jared reviewed that. I know you like that one.
I really liked it. How far along are you, Damon?
Couple hours into it, yeah.
Enjoying it?
Oh, yeah. It really took me back because I played Day of the Tentacle way back in the day, but I haven't played it since then, since very near to its release, which is early 90s, mm-hmm. I think. But it was cool how it instantly just took me back to that time when I was playing that game. I didn't have a PC, I was a console gamer, but my next door neighbor and best friend had a PC, and they would get computer games all the time. So I would go over to his house, we played Day of the Tentacle, and it was revisiting it was a very nice nostalgic experience. And not only that, but like it takes you back to a more innocent time, mm-hmm. not only in my life, but for the video game industry, because the game's really funny.
It's totally a cute game, but funny.
Funny, but like it's not mean-spirited at all. It's like totally like, you know, for lack of a better term, family friendly.
Just group of friends.
And yeah. Also, they handle they have redrawn graphics.
Yeah.
But they handle switching back and forth between the classic visuals and sound really fast. You just tap the pad on the DualShock 4, and it goes seamlessly.
Yeah. So, even in the middle of an animation or a line, it works. It's great. Yeah. They did a great job with it.
And I guess I didn't even remember that the original game had full voice acting.
Yeah.
I didn't remember that either. I was surprised.
Yeah. It took me back. Like as soon as I heard it, I remembered all the voices. And then like the audio still sounds great. I mean, maybe I shouldn't be surprised, but it's like 20 some years ago, it's like, wow,
what
the audio still sounds great.
I wonder if the talkie
90,
Jared, do you happen to know if the talkie version came later or did it launch?
Of Tentacle?
Must have been multiple versions.
Yeah,
I do not remember, okay. Justin, I'm sorry.
Because they couldn't have put that audio on the floppy disk.
No,
it was a CD version. But I don't
sometimes
remember.
They were day and date, but sometimes you would get like a talkie version like a year later or something like that.
I do not remember.
Anyway, Day of the Tentacle Remastered is out on PlayStation 4 and Vita right now. It's really, really good.
Yep.
I play, I'm going back to, so here's how I play PC games is I have a Mac that, I play Steam games on, and then if there's a whole host of hundreds of other games that are only on Windows, and then I boot into Windows, so I dual boot that computer, but it's sort of a pain to reboot it, so I'll boot it into Windows and go on a binge of like playing, now I'm going to play through, 20 or 30 Windows games, and that's what I'm going through right now is, again, I realize I'm getting close to 1,000 Steam games, and I said, maybe I should play a few of these. So just weird, small, indie stuff. I can name drop Gemcraft Chapter Zero, which is probably the best tower defense game ever made. It's top tier. I mean, it's top five, for sure.
Is it available on mobile?
No. Another little sort of pixel arty dungeon diving rhythm-based game called Deep Dungeons of Doom.
Hmm. That one I've played, yeah.
Yeah, that's
cool.
That one's
good. That one is on mobile.
What else? I always like to name drop smaller stuff. Oh, I played a really cool, it's sort of a casual, I don't know how to describe it. It's like half RPG, half point-and-click adventure game called A Hero of the Kingdom. Hmm. So just cool, smaller, like I'm just sort of sifting through my Steam library every night and picking out some games that I didn't play when I was booted into Mac mode. And I have many hundreds still to go.
Jared, how about you?
I'm playing Fallout 4 Automatron right now.
Which is out now, right?
Which is out now. I'm playing it for review, for the guide, and for fun. So a little bit of everything. And it's solid. I'm really enjoying it. It's short, but it lets me go and kill robots, take their body parts, and build my own robots out of them. And that's pretty much all I want in life.
So not any new story content?
There's new story content. Yeah, there's a short new series. I think it's four main story missions. Then there's some Radiants that come out of that. But the story missions are tied, it's very clever, tied Radiance. Into the robots. So the way you...
That's what they call the never-ending mission systems in that game.
Yeah, which actually...
They're very annoying.
Prove useful.
Oh, you mean like go get this thing off
another
the top
settlement
of the building?
Needs your help.
Yeah, exactly. One of those type things. So you go and integrated into the missions are lots and lots of robot enemies. And since you need robot parts to build new robots, it's actually great. You go kill a bunch of enemies and you take all their body parts, you take them back to your camp, you upgrade your robots, you build new robots, you go back out on another mission, you get more parts, and it just builds a wonderful loop. And then the Radiants are actually helpful because I'm like, oh man, I sure could use some more robot parts. Why wait? There's an evil robot out there to go kill and take all his stuff off of. And
so what I like about Automatron, I'm not actually playing it yet because I'll play all the DLC when it's finished, but Jared, just based on what you described, it sounds like, although there is some story content, 2-4 hours worth of story content, it's the best kind of DLC in that it enriches the rest of the game as well. It's not like, here's the game, and now here's this little separate pocket add-on. Like, you can take your robot companion through the rest of the game. It lets you mod up Kiri and take her with you. Yep. Like, it puts robots out in the world for you to kill. Mm-hmm. So even outside of the story stuff, which is supposedly pretty good, I just really, to me, that's the best kind of DLC is something that, you can just take with you from, level one, although it doesn't unlock till a little later, but from, you know, early on through the end of the game, you know, it sort of colors the rest of Fallout 4 as well. That's really cool.
I think you're absolutely right, Justin. I'm wandering the wasteland now on non-automatron missions with my Pinkbot 10 Trillion.
Yeah, and automatrons, and, like, improve, you know, or, you know, giving you a different experience. Mm-hmm. That's great.
It's really fun.
Sam, what are you playing?
Well, I beat Zelda 2, which I know everybody will be very proud of me for.
Woohoo!
Shadow Link, it took about 5 minutes of hitting a single button to beat him, and it hurt my hand. So that wasn't fun. That game is very difficult. But I'm also playing Fire Emblem. I'm still on that first Birthright quest. I'm on, like, level 27 and making a lot of babies. Mm.
Where'd you fall in Zelda 2 in the end, Sam? Did you enjoy it?
I would recommend people play it mm-hmm. with save states.
Yeah, that helps.
Save states fix that game and a few. You know, it's common that old games are fixed with save states.
Yeah.
And that's fine, and that's a good reason to use new digital versions of them or emulation to beat them in legal varieties. But I could. That's a weird game because I couldn't go back to my NES and really enjoy it.
Yeah, that's. Zelda 2 is more fun with save states. I think sometimes it's a good thing because that game has problems. It is my favorite Zelda. It has a lot of problems, but I love
it.
Twilight Princess, I think, is the best Zelda.
But not
Zelda 2 is my favorite.
We always have to clarify.
Yeah, I'm still playing Final Fantasy Record Keeper and Metal Slug Attack on mobile every day.
Well, I mean, I'm still playing Hearthstone, but we don't need to go there every episode.
Sure.
All right, it's time for Video Game 20 Questions. Our suggestion this week comes from Matt in North Carolina.
Oh, where in North Carolina, does he say?
North Carolina.
Ah, too bad.
One question burned.
I might know it.
Did this game originally release on a cartridge?
No.
Was this game released after January 1st, 2000?
Yes. Sorry, Sam.
We're screwed. but it wasn't on a cartridge.
Yep, so it's not.
So it probably was on a disc or downloadable, right?
Yeah, probably so.
Was this game originally a downloadable game?
Yes.
Ooh, originally downloadable.
It could still be mobile.
Yeah, probably not. Maybe. Was this game originally released on mobile?
No.
Okay, so downloadable, could be arcade or could be. Is this
PC or arcade?
Yeah, maybe a Steam release, maybe a.
Yeah, I would ask.
Yeah, is this a Steam release?
No.
Oh,
it's 5 questions.
Same question, Xbox Live.
You're asking if it's an Xbox Live arcade game?
Yeah.
No.
Mm. Oh. Okay. What does that leave us?
I'm sure
PlayStation,
gonna...
PlayStation
and Wii U,
Network.
And Wii and...
Yeah, I guess.
Yes.
I was just... Yeah. Okay. Well, who's released more? I mean, I guess we should just narrow it down between Sony and Nintendo. This game originally appear on a Nintendo console?
No.
Okay. Did this game originally appear on a Sony console?
Yes.
Okay.
So downloadable Sony game.
Is it Pain?
We should probably...
I know it's Pain.
So PS3 or PS4 might be the next thing to do?
Yeah, is this a PS3 game?
Yes.
Okay. Downloadable
PS3 game. We did good, guys. That's what happens when we stop horsing around. So it could be Pain.
Does it have horses in it?
That's good. That's not a bad question. I guess what weirds me out is, like, I'm trying to think about what were PSN exclusives. Everyday Shooter.
Well, we don't know if it's an exclusive.
Super Stardust. Yeah, but it didn't appear on XBLA.
Pixel junk stuff.
But it could be on PC or mobile.
He didn't say no mobile.
It could be.
We didn't clarify PC. But we did, but it's not on mobile because we asked that.
So it's not Vita or PlayStation.
Yeah, Pixel Junk's a safe bet. Super Stardust is a very great bet.
Yep.
Does this game feature a high score?
I don't know.
Okay, let me rephrase the question to get at what I was really trying to get at.
Do you play for scores?
Would you consider it like an arcade style experience, arcade style game?
Sounds like Journey.
I consider Super Stardust.
Did we already do 20 questions of Journey? And
kind
does that matter?
Of. Kind of an arcade style.
Maybe Flower?
Yeah, Flower, Journey.
It's more arcadey than StarCraft.
Hmm. It's more arcadey than StarCraft?
Yeah.
All right, let's see.
What is that even?
I'm just saying, I'm trying to think of like a big, intense hardcore game. Like,
mm-hmm.
That's 10 questions.
I consider arcadey, you're playing for a high score, you've got a few lives, and you die, and then you repeat the same experience again.
What's the company that made Flower and Journey and everything?
That game company?
Is it made by that game company?
No.
Okay.
Okay, there we go.
So, that's 11 questions. You know, it's a downloadable game that appeared on PlayStation first.
And it is,
PS3.
I would say not try, Super Stardust.
Maybe try the Pixel Junk stuff and see if it's one of those. Like, is
first
it a Pixel
party
Junk
too?
Game?
Should we ask about it?
Yeah, but
first
none
party?
Of them are kind of arcadey.
Yeah, well, he said kind of.
I don't think we got any Pixel information out of that.
Kind of arcadey.
Yeah,
I guess. I mean, kind of.
Let's see, what else we got here? So this is PSN, it's a Sony release. Studio, we could try genre.
Did you ask if Sony released this game?
No.
Yeah, I don't think you asked that.
No, we didn't.
Did Sony release this game?
Yes.
Okay.
So
yes! Nailed it.
Is this game 2D?
Yes.
Okay, 2D Sony game. Oof.
Was there a...
Did they do
the Blood Rain game?
Did they do Scott Pilgrim? Who did Scott Pilgrim?
No, that was
on multiple platforms.
Was it
multi-platform?
Yeah.
Was it even only on
Xbox? It came on Xbox. Yeah, it came out on Xbox.
But could it be like a brawler? That's kind of arcadey.
Could be kind of. We could ask if it's a shooter.
Did Sony make a lot of brawlers?
I can't think of any.
Is it a shooter?
No.
Okay, so it's not any of the. So it's not.
I mean, not like.
It's not like Super Stardust. It's not a.
We knew it's 2D.
Well, yeah, but when I said shooter, I was talking like Gradius type thing, like a lot of those.
I understand. Did Sony make a lot of those?
They published a couple.
Is this a sci-fi game?
I may have wasted it.
No, it's not a sci-fi game. Ooh, it's 15 nice. Questions.
Cool.
And I'm realizing that something I said in the past is actually a huge hint.
Oh no.
So, you know.
Oh boy.
Is it because he compared it to StarCraft?
Let's see.
Five questions ago.
Oh, could it be, what was the 2D game where you sent out units and they would smash together with the two bases at each end? Was that Fat Princess? Or there's a game like that.
But
there's another one where you shoot arrows to try to destroy the troops that are coming at you.
Well, why can't it be Fat Princess?
It could be, but I'm just saying there were a few games in that genre.
And plus, that's a strategy game, like a real-time strategy game.
It's vaguely...
Is this an RTS?
No, I think we need to. I want to figure out.
Damon made a very interesting face when you asked that, though.
Well, because he was thinking about it.
Should we ask if it's cel shaded?
We can just. Does this game star a fat princess?
Yes.
Yeah.
was your clue the StarCraft clue?
Yeah, because I realized Fat Princess is kind of like an action RTS.
That's what got me thinking about that. Okay. For sure.
But not arcadey. Like, I don't know if it's like a simplified RTS game, but I don't know if I would call it arcadey.
Yeah, you made a good call.
And I don't know if there's a high score.
I would probably say no, but I can see.
Also, because you said it's more arcadey than StarCraft, I'd have been so mad at the end if we'd gotten to it and it was Fat Princess, because I'd been like, that's like StarCraft. So
yeah.
Thank you for the hint.
Developed by Titan Studios, who is no longer in business.
Ooh. Yeah.
Yeah.
They made a Fat Princess PSP. How rare is that?
PSP.
Never played that version.
Released in 2009 on PS3, eventually came to PSP.
Is that spinoff still coming out?
I think it came out. Fat Princess Adventures.
Did it
and I think
out?
It came out
came and went.
On
I don't
Vita.
So. I don't. I thought it was a PS4 game.
I thought it was going to be a Vita game.
Fat Princess was
no
fun.
No one knows.
If you were playing with vaporware at this point.
Yeah, if you were playing with people that knew what they were doing, it was always like a stalemate in the middle. That was it.
Yeah, because and just went back and forth like this.
Yeah, it was very, very hard
so
to actually win.
Oh, so frustrating.
Nicely done. 16
but for
questions.
The first day, it was fun.
Thank you for the suggestion, Matt in North Carolina.
Yeah, that's a great one. That was a hard one.
You got there, though. You got there.
It's not as hard as Dynamite Heady last week.
Oh!
Last week was Dynamite Heady.
Oh, I wish I'd have been here.
Oh, that was
brutal. I've never even heard of that game.
Dynamite Heady
Sega
is great.
It's a game developed by Treasure. So when their heyday for Gunstar Heroes.
Is it like...
You throw your head at people and it explodes. It's like Decap Attack.
Decap Attack. Yeah,
exactly.
Say.
Levi guessed Decap Attack.
Oh.
Instead of... On question 20, he guessed Decap Attack.
And it could have been either.
Well, but it was Dynamite Heady.
The questions led
it
to...
He did ascertained that it was likely one of those.
And then if only it was 21 questions, we would have been fine.
Exactly.
And that's brutal.
You said you were thrown off about Treasure. Do you guys think Treasure is still in business today?
Treasure's still in business.
Yeah, I found out.
But they make pachinko machines.
Actually, kind of in name only.
Like. I was just going to say, I just read a report that they might be done making new games. That's
exactly. Like, what they've been doing is licensing out their older games for release on Xbox Live Arcade. I think the actual employees are only 3 or 4 people, and they use contractors for everything.
Which is a darn shame, because Treasure produced... They were the hardest core of hardcore
Raiden
gamers.
Silver Gun.
Yeah, Bangayo. Gunstar Heroes, Guardian Heroes.
Yeah.
Is there a port of Guardian Heroes you can play anywhere today?
Guardian Heroes was ported to Xbox Live Arcade. It is available on the Xbox 360.
Is it on the backwards compatible list?
Yes.
Not yet.
Hmm. What about Guardian Legends?
Guardian Legend, you have to steal.
We can play that on my NES.
I want to do a feature. I know we got to end the show. I want to do a feature. Just Guardian Heroes made me think, because that was a Saturn game for years and years and years, and you know nobody ever played it. Like, what are the best games that are like, trapped on old consoles that never got? Because there was, like, Sega Saturn has Blazing, what's the firefighting game?
I don't know the name of the firefighting
game. Or, like, Knights, or just, like, any of those Saturn games.
Or Princess Crown, or, Saturn games, Radiant Silver Gun, Dodonpachi, Sekiyo Gurantai, and Honor.
Dodonpachi's ported.
Is it?
I don't think it's, like, on mobile. It's, like,
But they're not crappy. They're really good. Yeah. Dodonpachi on mobile's really good.
I'm not crazy about it. That's not how I want to play Dodonpachi.
Every Virtual Boy game? Trapped forever.
Yeah, why are those not on 3DS? I don't understand.
That's a really good idea. Maybe I'll get to work on that when I have a free afternoon.
Wario Land is a pretty good
game. Can I play with that?
Game.
I want to come play.
Nope. Yes.
We can go play Guardian Legend.
Yeah, also you can play Radiant Silvergun on Xbox 360. We can go play Guardian Legend as well.
Radiant Silvergun and Ikaruga are both on.
Guys, we're canceling our afternoon appointments. We're just playing Radiant Silvergun.
That sounds like
a
plan to me.
Good. I'm great with that.
I'm in.
That is all the scoops we have for you this week. It's a long holiday weekend here in the U.S., so hopefully you have some time to play some video games.
Yeah.
But thank you, Justin. Thank you, Jared. Thank you, Sam.
My
name is Damon. This is IGN GameScoop, and we're out.
Hey there, this is Justin Bartha. I made a funny new podcast, King of the Egg Cream. It has the greatest cast in the history of podcasts with actors like Louis Black.
I'm torn by my feelings for two women.
Bobby Cannavale.
You can eat it, or if someone hits you, you can put it on your cut.
Melanie Lynskey.
I wonder what these marvelous things are that look just like boiled chicken feet.
Jason Ritter.
I can break things and pick locks and kill people.
Michael Stuhlbarg.
The whole point is to inspire people that they should make themselves better.
Ari Grainer.
No, don't whet its appetite. What are you, an idiot?
Me, Justin Bartha.
That's not just any egg cream, that's a Lemke's special.
And all narrated by the hilarious Richard Kind.
This is the story of Harry Dalowitz. And how he rose from nothing to become New York's King of the Egg Cream.
So if you like funny true stories, come listen to King of the Egg Cream, available wherever you get your podcasts.